Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo and we are going to be talking about 12. Yes, 12. What's going to happen in 2012? Well, we've got a guest that's going to be giving us a little bit of his particular insight. We're going to be talking about his book, which is titled The 12. William Gladstone is my guest. Now, this is a novel, and as those of you who know who listen to this program regularly, I don't often do novels. But this one, 12, 21, 12, fascinated me, and I thought, it makes for interesting reading. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Don. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with your listeners.
Well, it's a joy. Now, you don't mind me calling you Bill instead of
William? No, that's absolutely fine. My mom wanted William Gladstone on any book I wrote, so I use William on the book, but actually I'm very comfortable with Bill. All my friends call me Bill, so that's fine.
Well, that is absolutely terrific. Now, I want my audience to know that you have been involved in the world of publishing for a good deal of time. You know a number of very, very popular authors, Eckhart Tolle, Deepak Chopra, Barbara Marx Hubbard, and you've been in this business for a long, long time. In fact, you were a contributor to the first print-on-demand book publishing company. You've worked and interacted with people that had a vision for the future that was just, you know, awesome. Peter Norton, the founder of Norton Computing, and a number of other individuals. You've worked with a number of different companies. You were the founding president of the Alumni Association for the School Year Abroad, which is based in Andover, Massachusetts. You are a man that his past education involved anthropology. And you live in one of the beautiful areas of California, Cardiff by the Sea, the 12. Now, why did you decide to jump on the bandwagon with everybody else that's been
talking
about?
Okay, well, first of all, let me be real clear. I didn't jump on anybody's bandwagon.
Okay, good.
This is the real deal. This book, The 12, is a book that was inspired over 30 years ago, and most of the book is based on actual events. And after writing the book, I sent it to a number of famous people, including Jose Arguelles, who created the harmonic convergence back in 87 or 88, and whose entire life has been dedicated to studying the Mayans and the prophecy of 2012 and the end of the Mayan calendar. I did have a vision 30 years ago of a film, and I saw a final scene, and it did coincide with 2012. But this project has been in the works for 30 years, so I really don't like to be considered jumping on any bandwagon. At the same time, I'm very happy that there's so much interest now in 2012 because it certainly helps get people interested in the novel, The 12. But the novel, The 12, and one of the reasons I am being given the opportunity to talk on a number of radio shows that normally don't have novelists is this novel, The 12, is really about much more. It is a great story. It's going to make a great movie. But there's really a very important spiritual and social message to the book. And that's the real motivation I have for, you know, writing this book and talking about this book with, you know, you and other radio hosts. The 12 gives a vision for what the world can be, at the same time providing a wake-up call, which humanity desperately needs if we're going to avert some of the disasters that some of the popularizers of the Mayan calendar are talking about, and for that matter, many of the world religions. We have, you know, these doomsday scenarios that are in Revelations. We have doomsday scenarios from Nostradamus. We have other religions which talk about second coming and other massive changes at this period of time. And the novel, The 12, incorporates much of this research and many of these beliefs and presents a possible model and way forward that is actually practical.
I think that's one of the reasons why I enjoyed the book so much when I went through it, and I had my handy-dandy highlighter. But one of the things that always intrigues me is how there is this positioning of mentality
mm-hmm.
where people decide they want something absolutely horrific to happen. They really, really, really yearn for it. And I have heard, I've gotten so much material because of doing mm-hmm. a daily show that I haven't even bothered with because it is this holier than thou, excuse my English, mm-hmm. but that's what it is. Doomsday garbage.
I totally agree
really,
with you, Donna.
I don't have any time for it.
Yeah. Well, this is really one of the main reasons I wrote The 12. And in fact, I've already sent word out to the people that are producing this movie, 2012. I've seen the trailers, and I can tell from the trailers it's your typical Doomsday
mm-hmm.
scenario. And I've already said, let's debate this. What are your sources? Why did you make this? What social purposes, if any, other than just making a lot of money, do you have for making a film like this, which is going to scare the bejesus out of people? And we could say the same thing. I mean, I'm not trying to single out the makers of this film, and there's some fine actors in it and excellent
mm-hmm.
cast and everything. But there's too many people who are trying to benefit from, it's the end of the world, so you should do this, you should do that.
Right.
And that's just not right. And I don't want to see that happen. And it actually creates a negative vortex of energy, if you will, and the more people are focused on the negative, the more likely negative things will happen. It's like any human being has good days and bad days. You
mm-hmm.
have good things that happen in your life and bad things that happen in your life. And if you spend all your time focusing on the bad, it's going to seem to you that most of your life is about bad things. Well, that's not actually true. If you actually analyze it, even someone who is not having a good day or a good year, and I know there's a lot of people out there, at least economically, not having a good year, if you actually analyze moment to moment what most of your life is like, most of it is pretty good. And
mm-hmm.
I think as a human species, it's the same thing. Sure, we have problems, and sure, we have certain situations which are absolutely horrific that we need to address. But overall, being a human being is a pretty great thing. Being alive on this planet at this time is a pretty great thing. And what The 12 as a novel is trying to show people is that there is magic in everything. We have a main character in this novel, Max Duff, who
yes.
is based, quite frankly, on many experiences I had in my own life. A lot of really bad things happen to Max, but Max never seems daunted by them, and he perseveres. And he finds that there is magic in every moment in his life, and he finds that everyone he meets is potentially an ally in a much bigger mission. And on some level, though the novel is a novel and a work of fiction, metaphorically, this may be true for every one of our listeners. If you look for the magic in your lives, you're going to find it. And if you look for the synchronicities and you look for the hidden importance of the relationships you have with people, I think you're going to find that the world is a much better place than some of our mass media is leading you to believe.
And that is where being consciously present with whatever's going on right now in one's life makes such a difference. And that is one of the many components that you touch upon in the book. Now, let's talk about Max. Now, he's based on you and many
yes,
of the
he is.
Experiences
I,
that you
I was
have.
Warned by my publisher not to make it too autobiographical, and they made me change a lot of things. They say, this is a work of fiction. You can't possibly do this as nonfiction. Half the book takes place in the year 2010 and beyond. We're not there yet. And I said, that's all true, but, I want this book to be based on actual experiences. So every adventure in the first half of the book, including all of the locations, Peru, India, Jerusalem, Japan, Istanbul, all of those locations are places that I actually visited at the exact time as they're described in the novel. And one of the most gratifying pieces of information I've received from the early readers is that people really feel they're present. They can sense. And this is one of the reasons I'm really looking forward to when we do get a chance to do the film. I've really captured, apparently, what these individual locations feel like
mm-hmm.
In real time. And that, I think, is very important because most people, frankly, just aren't going to have the opportunity to visit some of these places, which really are, for the most part, they were just gifts to me. I was very, very fortunate right out of college. I was able to get a job as production coordinator for Rod Serling's In Search of Ancient Mysteries and was literally paid to search for ancient mysteries anywhere in the world it might take me. And, so part of the early part of the novel, The 12, is sharing that experience, but sharing it in a fictionalized context. And, there is a story here, and the story is made up. So so that part, you know, let's not get too far away. But everything leading up to it, including some of the more sort of unbelievable aspects of the early part of the story, are actually based on real events.
Well, let's address one of those real events, because you start off with Max, and as a child, he's extremely talented. Now, he doesn't choose to speak, and I've known of families that have had kids that have done this, where they have chosen not to even open their mouth. And then all of a sudden, when they do, they're holding such intelligent conversations that parents are like, what did we miss here? And that's what the character Max does. He doesn't choose to speak. He also has an extremely violent brother. And so there is this image that is painted, but he has a moment when he's in a doctor's office and he's being treated, and he dies.
And this actually is based on a real experience I actually had. Clinically, I was dead. And the experience described in the novel, The 12, is the exact experience that I had. I did do research when I was writing the novel, The 12, and I got hold of other researchers who have interviewed literally hundreds of near-death experiences. And it was very gratifying to me that over 90% of the near-death experiences that they studied had similar qualities of feeling this state of bliss and complete forgiveness for anything sort of negative that one had experienced, and really the state of euphoria that I would say most people who have been, you know, clinically dead have actually experienced.
Now, with that experience, you have a beautiful description that you give in the book The 12, which, as you have just said, is not unlike what has been described by many different people. It has different aspects of experience to it, but that is what always happens. There's always going to be that very personal feeling, but you've done a wonderful, wonderful expression of it. But you go into how Max grows up, and he ends up as an adult to be in Miami, and he's just almost insatiable in his desire for learning and for application of the learning. His curiosity is...
Well, I would say it's more about the curiosity and the insatiable appetite for fun and joy, because unlike most novels that are written, you know, that do relate to spiritual themes, Max is not, in fact, a seeker. Max experiences life and fully engages with the moment, whatever that moment is. When he agrees to go on another film expedition that happens to be about the search for the historical Jesus, his job is to interview the Dalai Lama and many other world spiritual leaders. But it is not something that he necessarily sought. Later on in the novel, Max is also just sort of a tag-along for his wife to a Buddhist retreat in which he is introduced to Chöden meditation. Max actually is only there sort of because he's trying to be a good husband. He's not actually, again, that interested in learning about meditation. As it turns out, he and the monk who is doing the teachings end up, even though they can't speak the same language, having an incredible bond. And once again, Max is introduced to some, you know, very amazing spiritual practices without actually seeking them.
Max ends up in Bolivia in a section of your book.
Yes.
And this is a country where revolution is just right after breakfast, sometimes before breakfast.
Well, I think they've had, I'm not sure of the numbers, but I think they had 159 different governments in 143 years. You know, it's relatively stable today compared to its past. But again, the Bolivian experience and description is based on actual events. You know, Max, just as he's incarcerated and questioned, and, you know, that actually happened and, you know, obviously set a direction for the character in the novel and for me personally as one who had those experiences. In the novel, however, it ended up being quite important. I just wrote the first part of this book as the backstory for the main character in the film. So in the beginning, I was very literal in terms of describing events as they had actually happened, since I was basing the character on myself. And I happened to choose the Bolivian experience because it's such a, you know, sort of dynamic, colorful, crazy adventure. But what I found out later on, because that's really right in Bolivia, which borders the Lake Titicaca, is the border between Bolivia and Peru, is actually where the spiritual aspect of this journey that Max takes begins. And I found out, subsequent to writing the first draft of the novel, that many people believe that Lake Titicaca is, in fact, the new spiritual center for humanity. And so I found that very interesting coincidence, if, you know, it is a coincidence. There's part of me that actually thinks that the novel, The Twelve, kind of was written through me so that people can share and go on their own spiritual journey, and that there's actually some message that the universe itself is trying to convey, because this is just one of about 18 different coincidences, if you will, that I've discovered after writing the novel related to other spiritual seekers. So, you know, the whole Bolivia adventure, which at first I thought was kind of over the top and maybe too much detail, was more just for the character. When I reread and was given this information by some very major scholars, including Stitchin, who's written extensively, he sold millions of books on the 12th planet, he in his book says Lake Titicaca and the city which Max goes to on the border of Lake Titicaca is clearly the oldest inhabited area in the New World and possibly in the entire world. So there's some things like that that happened that I learned about after writing the novel that has really made me enthusiastic about promoting the novel far beyond the film, and in fact as almost the beginning of a social awareness to bring people to a place where this event of December 21st, 2012 can be something very positive and that we can actually do together, if you will. There are some scenes in the later part of the book which actually serve as a model that I found out after writing the novel is already started by a number of Mayan-related groups. And so it's very exciting for me what, you know, sort of is happening with this novel. And, you know, nothing, you know, so anyway, the bottom line was I didn't cut that very long scene about the Bolivian adventure because it ended up having a much more dynamic and direct role in the whole story than I had realized when I first wrote it.
Well, one of the points, you have these points of detail that are in your book periodically. And like I said, my yellow highlighter was having a wonderful time. And you mentioned how with Lake Titicaca, it has rejuvenating waters, and just what you said, the birthplace of humanity. You also weave love stories throughout the book, interactions, personal experiences, sexual awakening, and there is a woman by the name of Maria that is very, very special. And one of the things that Max experiences, because he had the near-death experience, but he has these dreams where he is out of body, and he is in another place, and he's having communication. And there was one dream about fighting dragons, and he's told how to overcome the battle, which would be ongoing and never-ending. And he goes through these events and associations with people and begins to recognize different individuals, and that's part of the title of The Twelve. These 12 people and the special associations that he has. Now, there is a part in your book that talks about India. And Naipaul is the character. And he talked about being a Sanskrit scholar and has chatted with Max and has read a number of things. And he says, in India, the knowledge of flying machine goes back more than 1,000 years. And nuclear power was known by the East Indians. It's written in Sanskrit or whatever it is, and I'm not claiming to be a scholar, but they have had records on nuclear power, the destructiveness of it, how it's made, and all kinds of things for centuries. And it's fascinating to me how you have brought this in, how yogis that are trained can be in two places at the same time, can go anywhere in the universe. Tibetan lamas are known for this. Levitating. All of these little items that you bring out, like the Caucasian race having no connection with the gene pool of the Japanese. And just little points that come out. And I thought, this is really fascinating, but hearing you talk about your own personal experiences and all of the various things that you have folded into this, I think it gives the story substance. I don't think that it takes away from it at all. I think that's what makes it very, very comfortable reading, and at the same time can stimulate the curiosity in the reader, which I'm sure is one of the points that you wanted to do.
Absolutely. No, I'm so happy that you have an appreciation for really what I would call the power and depth of the novel, because I did have to, you know, discuss with my editors and the publisher different ways that we could position the 12. And, you know, clearly the second half of the book in particular is very much in sort of the spirit of a Celestine prophecy, where there's, you know, the action starts to really pick up and you see very clearly sort of a direction and if you will, a spiritual message that the novel is really climaxing
mm-hmm.
with.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike this, and, you know, but if I had only emphasize that, we would have ended up with a nice little 128-page parable kind of book, and, you know, there would have been a market for it and all. But what was really of much greater interest to me was the development of the character, because really it's through an individual life that we can learn the most. And in this case, you know, it's through the life of Max. But, you know, a lot of things happen to Max, good and bad things, and it's learning what Max learns. He actually gets to a place that I would call is a place of wisdom. And it's interesting that the first time he gets to this place, he's actually a student at Yale University, and he writes this essay for his professor, final exam in philosophy, called Understanding Understanding. And in this essay, he comes up with the formulation that A is and is not A. Well, the university doesn't understand what he's writing about. There's some other events that, you know, are unrelated to the philosophy itself, but related to the incident of writing the paper, and they decide that Max should go on leave. And when Max agrees to that, they then said, good, now we'll put you in the infirmary. And then when Max says, well, but I want to keep thinking, and, you know, the implications of this A is and is not A are quite valuable, they say, well, we think you're loony, and we're going to lock you up. So Max learns, you know, sort of very early in his life, that you can't share wisdom with everyone indiscriminately. It's
mm-hmm.
very gratifying to me, because this actually was based on a real incident, and the paper described actually was written. 30 years after that event, I actually had, by supposed coincidence, the opportunity to meet the head of the philosophy department of Haverford University, one of our premier small universities on the East Coast, who described his life's work of 30 years and basically confirmed what Max had written about as an 18-year-old of A is and is not A. This particular philosophy professor prefers to think of it as man is and is not divine, and he has his old system. But it's very similar, the basic idea. And then just a few months ago, when I sent out the galleys to the 12, a top psychologist also trained at Harvard and Yale, who taught at Yale, said this is very similar to the systemic memory hypothesis, which was my life's work, and this is really brilliant, and the implications of this A is and is not A are really quite vast, and you can relate it to quantum physics and, you know, the way that things are, you know, is it a wave? Is it a particle? And, you know, it gets into very complex things. And my point in sort of the book of seeing this is you don't know where true wisdom is going to come from. And just because people don't recognize it doesn't mean it's not real. And I think this is very important, at particularly this moment in time for planet Earth, because the supposed experts, and I have great respect, you know, for Yale, Harvard, I went to all these, you know, great institutions, and there's a lot of good things, and you do learn things, and they're great environments for learning. But I one of the points I wanted to make through the novel, The 12, is that every individual is essential, and every individual needs to come to their own sense of what reality really is and their own purpose. Max ends up realizing that he has a larger purpose in life. I propose through the novel that on some level everyone is a Max. Everyone has a larger purpose. And what really gives the greatest joy in life is finding others who share that purpose. And in realizing that purpose, and the purpose, and I think this is something that almost everyone who's had a near-death experience realizes also, is far beyond the pure ego needs and the pure material comforts of one small human body. We each have our small human body. I mean, even if you're 6'6", it's relatively small when you look at the vastness of the universe. And we need to take care of these bodies, and we should enjoy these bodies. But the fundamental purpose for being a human being goes far beyond that. And I think when we realize that and we're able to connect with others in something grander than just our own immediate survival, we are able to access the divine parts of ourselves and experience the true joy of being a human being.
Well, the 12 is fascinating because eventually all of them come together. And this is about his journey. And they all are going to meet in a spot. And there's going to be an absolutely incredible experience that changes and affects the lives of every single one of them. And each of the 12 has such a special part to play. And when you go through the book, I like how there is a weaving of information so that the reader will want to know what other level there is that they are going to find out about. And I think that you've done a masterful job at being able to create these different plateaus within the book that will lead into the final conclusion. Of course, I'm not going to tell anybody what the final conclusion is. I'm not going to do that. They're going to have to get your book. But, Bill, I do think that the way you have presented the material will be empowering to the reader in as much as if there is a recognition by the reader that, just as you said, every single human being, every single form of life is significant. It all has its value. And we're in this universal tapestry of experience. And taking control and being consciously present and being open and receptive to learning and to shifting paradigms, there is that miracle level. And this is not out in woo-woo land.
Exactly. Well, I'm so glad you say that, because too many people have this idea that, you know, oh, that's good for the woo-woo people, but hard scientists don't believe this. Well, almost everything in the novel, The 12, is based on hard science. I do have, you know, degrees from Harvard and Yale. I am a director of the Club of Budapest, which is made up of top world scientists. Jane Goodall is a personal friend. I mean, these are people whose opinions have been, you know, formed over decades of doing real significant hard analyzed work. And these people share, I think, the basic message that you've articulated very well, and which is the basic message of the novel, The 12, that every human being can play a vital role in how we evolve as a human species. And that's really the most important message of The 12, and the real reason that I wrote the novel. I do hope that people will go to the website, www.12thebook.com. There's a nice video interview and some other information. There's even a contest we're going to be holding. One of the key scenes of the book takes place in Sedona, and the grand prize is going to be a trip for two to Sedona to re-experience the scene from the novel. I also am very pleased to be able to say that, you know, we're giving a portion of my royalties to the Jane Goodall Institute for their Roots and Shoots charity, which helps young children learn more about nature and actually plants trees all over the world. There's over 100,000 participants in that. So I'm really grateful, Donna, for the opportunity to be on your show and share the excitement that's growing around the novel, The 12.
Well, I think it is very well written. On the cover of the book, you say, be entertained, be inspired, be transformed. When we can recognize that we do not have to be victims, and that is what I think one of the many gifts that your book gives, is that we don't have to be victims here. If we are aware that every one of us can do our own portion, and if we choose to work together collectively, just like you mentioned the 100,000 participants with Jane Goodall's program and the difference that's making, you repeat that over and over and over again, that has a momentum that's going to what, and this may be a little vulgar, but it's going to kick negative butt to the moon.
Well, we certainly hope so. And, you know, I just want readers to really go away from this interview realizing that whatever change you're looking for in the world right now is going to come from you and people like you. It's not going to come from the people who are supposedly your elected leaders or the people that ended up running the big corporations that, you know,
right,
seem to be in control. That's really more of an illusion. It really is. I mean, when the Berlin Wall fell, it wasn't because somebody somewhere manipulated to make that happen. It was a spontaneous event based on the actions and thoughts of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people. And in terms of whatever crises we're facing with 2012, and I think 2012 is a good tipping point and metaphor for the end of the Mayan calendar, the end of a certain way of being, but it's also, as we say on the cover of the 12, a new beginning. And for those listeners out there who want a new beginning, just, you know, I hope you get a chance to read the novel, The 12, and I hope it inspires you to actually take action. We're going to be doing some events around the novel that are specific action events that, you know, we believe will have a significant impact on how the world does evolve. You can go and learn more at planetchange.tv as well as planetchange2012.com. These are two websites that have just been started that are really just for people who have positive solutions to post videos and blogs. And we'll be giving more information about what we're going to call the Focused Harmonic Convergence, which we're preparing with Jose Arguelles and Barbara Marx Hubbard and the Club of Budapest. So there's a lot more information that we'll be able to share, but the first step really is to read the novel, The 12, and wake up a little bit to the magic that you yourself are, because it's really about you.
Absolutely. William Gladstone, thank you for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo. Go to the website, 12thebook.com. All kinds of information there. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. Good things to share.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Welcome. This is Donna Sebo. By the way, the telephone lines are now open, and if you would like to call in and chat with me, I would be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. And all you have to do is call me on the toll-free telephone number, which is worldwide, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, I always like to know your first name or your initial, and of course where you're calling from. And then after that, you don't have to do anything. Just let me tell you what I perceive. That's right. I don't ask you any questions. And then when I'm finished, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that is of concern to you. So again, 888-815-9756 for the next half hour. Also, I want to remind those of you who are in the Western Washington area that I am going to be in Kent, Washington at Kent Commons for the Boeing Parapsychology Expo. Now, this is such a wonderful event. It's a semi-annual event, and I thoroughly enjoy participating in this because it's such an easygoing atmosphere. It's great for the entire family. People from all levels of experience, knowledge, have different products, offer different services will be there, including myself. The hours are from 9 to 5, and it is in Kent, Washington. So all you need to do is go to their website, bepcweb.org, bepcweb.org, and you'll get the map, you'll get the information, you'll have all of whatever you need. And I just invite you to come out. I'm going to be there. I'll have a booth. I'll be doing many sessions for people. And then also I will be speaking. So I look forward to having you join me. Bring a friend. Tell friends. It is wonderful, and it's just for the one Saturday, September the 26th. Also, I want to remind you that this Saturday I am going to be on Achieve Radio. And you go to AchieveRadio.com and go to Super Psychic. Yes, I'm going to be on with Bill, and we are going to be chatting for 2 hours from 4 until 6. It is a live broadcast, and I'm their guest. They've invited me to come and be a participant in the programming again, which I'm very pleased to have been invited back. It's a wonderful, wonderful feeling. And it gives me a chance to talk with other people as well. So if you want to listen to it, tell your friends and they can listen too. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat today. 888-815-9756. By the way, I'm going to share a little bit of information about Twitter with you. I can't say that I know a whole bunch about it. I've got enough on my plate without having to get involved with Twitter and Facebook. And yes, I am listed there. Yes, 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 I am. But I don't have enough hours in the day to work with it. But it is something that a lot of people are utilizing, and there are some things that I've come across in the way of information that I think you'll want to know about. But before I go into that, I want to let you know who's coming on the air with me next week. We've got a dynamic week. On Monday, we're going to be talking about success mapping. Arlene Johnson is a professional who has worked with a lot of people, and she has some marvelous ideas. And if you're feeling like your life is all left thumbs, that nothing is really flowing the way you want, I think you're going to enjoy Arlene. And then, Simply an Inspired Life, Marianne Rademacher. Now, she has been a guest on my show before, and inspiration is something we all need. Why? Because we need to know that we have something that we can expand ourselves into. And when you're inspired, you have all this wonderful energy. And speaking of inspired, if you are wanting to get into shape, T-Tap, yes, Teresa, she's off of her busy, busy summer schedule and is going to be back with us. We have so much to share with you on Wednesday, including my taking on a challenge. I am going to want to lose one dress size in a month. Now, Teresa's presented this challenge to other people, so this is something that's coming up. So if you feel like your waist is too thick, your hips are too big, your thighs, whatever, your arms, let me tell you, T-Tap works. I have not been religious about it, and yet there were another 3.5 inches that I found that I had toned up without a lot of effort, folks. So overall, there's been over 30 inches that I have been able to tone up myself physically. So I am a walking, talking example, and now I'm working on a one dress size. So Teresa's going to be on Wednesday, and we're going to be talking about this big time. On Thursday, I'm going to have an open mic hour. I don't often do this, but I really like to do it occasionally, and that'll be a full hour for anybody to call into. And then on Friday of next week, if you're into animal communicating, you're going to want to know about Dawn Brunke. Now, Dawn is an animal communicator, has been for years. Her book is Animal Voices, Animal Guides. And we are going to be talking with Dawn about how we can develop our capacities for communicating with animals. She's a great gal. She's up in Alaska, and I'm so pleased to have her as a guest. So we have a dynamic week next week, and I invite you to share with your friends. And don't forget, we have archives here on BBS, and you are going to be able, whenever you want, if you're working during the day and you want to find out what's happened on the show, hey, go to the archives. It's very easy, very simple. Meanwhile, if you want to chat with me, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I wanted to share a few little odds and ends of details with you. One of the things has to do with flu. Now, I know you've probably heard all of this stuff about a vaccine and all kinds of things that are going on. Well, viruses are fascinating, fascinating life forms, I call them. And even though people say, well, they're not really that. But I wanted to share some specific details with you about this, because if we're educated, we understand. And if we're not educated, then fear often can come in and overwhelm us. Now, here's some information that I came across. The 1918 influenza strain. Are you aware of the pandemic that went around the world four times in 1918? Well, it did. And it was brought into America. They're not really sure how. It started in Kansas. They were able to trace it. The health organization that existed at that time was primitive compared to what we have today. But they recently, believe it or not, recently reconstructed an electron micrograph of this particular strain. Now, they have not had anything that has worked against this. It just doesn't exist, period, even today. Now, at that time, they said there were over 30 million deaths. That's true. It was well over 30 million people, because not only did it hit here in the United States, but it went around the world. To this day, we don't know how many it killed in China, nor do we know how many it killed in India. We have a vague idea about the U.S. and about Europe, but they honestly don't know, because people were literally dropping over like flies. They were stacking corpses in the street. Now, it was considered one of the most devastating disease outbreaks in human history recorded. Now, the descendants of that virus, of the virus itself, caused smaller pandemics in 57 and 68, but they're still in existence. Now, the H1N1, which they are putting a label on that being a pandemic, it is nowhere near what the 1918 situation was. They have labeled it as the swine flu. Now, The flu, as you know, if you do any reading or any studying, every year it changes. It's never the same. When they give you a flu shot, it is not going to even necessarily work against the virus that's going around. Why? Because it's changed. It has its own life. And there are scientists who say since 1918, we've lived in a pandemic era of influenza. Now, they don't feel that the current strain that they have read about and studied is as deadly as the 1918 version. However, it is affecting people primarily that have poor immune systems. And what has been interesting, and what I've gotten from some medical professionals, is that surprisingly, it has not affected the elderly as much as it has affected the very, very young. Why? Because the very, very young have not built up their immune systems. It's really fascinating stuff. So keep in mind, good sense dictates you take care of yourself, keep your immune system good and strong, and you have a good chance of surviving any kind of a flu virus. But there is always an ongoing medical challenge. There is no magic bullet here. There is no magic anything. It all depends on your immune system. Now, every year, 5 to 20%, now that's a wide, wide margin there, 5 to 20% of people in the United States get the flu. Lots of them are hospitalized, and 36,000 people a year will die. Now, they're not giving us the specific information about what's the average age group, but interestingly enough, from what I was told by medical professionals, it's not so much the elderly. They seem to have a better immune response than the real young people do. So they're trying to figure out how do you fight this at a molecular level, because that's really what you're doing. This is going to war. But we live in a time, we live in a world where things are changing, and all kinds of life forms are battling for survival just as much as we are. I think it's fascinating. And I think that we need to be educated and not live in a positioning of fear. Don't let people frighten you over this. Find out the facts, do some reading, and take care of yourself. That goes for any time. And I think you'll have a pretty good resistance. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. I'd be delighted to chat with you and give you some intuitive insight. By the way, you know, we're coming into the cooler temperatures. Now when we're going out in the morning and walking our Scotties, we're finding that we might have to put on a sweater. Not a coat, it's not cold, but there's that coolness of fall that's in the air. And, of course, in our backyard, we're seeing a lot of woodpeckers that are going through their migration to warmer temperatures. All of this, according and also with the leaves changing, it all makes a difference. So fall is definitely here in the Pacific Northwest, and there's just so many wonderful things that you can do when it comes to cooking. And I've got a pork and a sweet potato stew that I thought you might enjoy because it has a little bit of a kick to it. Would work well in a crock pot. But I'll share that with you if I have some time. But I promised you that I had some information regarding Twitter. Now, what's interesting, because of our electronic age, Twitter has just absolutely taken off, and big name personalities are using it, just anybody and everybody. There were 17 million U.S. visitors to Twitter www.thebetterself.com, and they said it's just exploded way past some of the most popular social networking sites like MySpace and Facebook. Now, large businesses like Disney, Starbucks, Dell, Microsoft decided they were going to communicate with all kinds of people, whether it was their employees, customers, prospects, whatever. And they said more than half of the Twitter activity today is currently business related. And also, it has become a mainstream web attraction. And many small business people are wondering, is this worth my time? Is this, you know, this is just something else to add to the plate of activity that I'm already feeling overwhelmed by. They just don't know that it's worth their time. Now, when it comes to business, you have to keep in front of you the fact that your business has to produce a profit of some kind. Now, Twitter, yeah, they can't really give financial facts about it because it's primarily used for networking. But you need to try it out if possible because it is free. Now, this is what you do. If you want to become an active Twitter user, you just visit their homepage, go to twitter.com, select a username and a password, and then you create a short, concise profile, including contact information and a photo. Now, if you already have a website, or if you have a blog, you can include that information as well. And then on Twitter, there is a box that says, what are you doing? Now, you have to keep it to 140 characters. That's called a tweet. It's 140 characters. That's all you do. So you can follow or monitor other people's tweets, but you may find that people are interested in what you have to say, and they're going to follow you. Then they say if you're smart, you won't talk about menial, trivial stuff, but you will comment on or make a statement about something that's going to get people's attention. You have information that will be compelling, that people will pick up on, and they may forward the information about what you're doing to other people on the network that they share. So if you don't know how to get started with it, then you may want to spend some time monitoring other people's Twitter sites and just see what they're doing and what's going on. And you might be able to find out about TweetDeck, which helps someone manage a flow of incoming communication so you can weed out what you don't want to be bothered with. And it's just absolutely amazing what people are coming up with and how they are establishing connections with people. One gal, Armit Dietrich, thought this is really not going to be worth my time, but she said she is really a football fan, so she started putting on information about football, and she just gets all kinds of responses. She said, I've got people that are following me now with everything that I put out. Her business increased 30%, and she credits most of it to the relationships that she's developed by tweeting. Who would have thought a little bird named Tweety would have had such an effect? I wonder if they use Tweety as a logo. Probably not. But when you're tweeting, you are communicating with people. So there's all kinds of information, and you can just pass it right along, and I guess I'm going to have to learn how to tweet too. I haven't done it yet, but hey, there's always a first time, right? Just have to figure out how to add that to the to-do list on a daily basis. This is Donna Siebel, and I realize that we're coming close to being out of time here. I want to remind you that on Monday we are going to be doing success mapping. I won't have time to share the recipe with you, but hey, we'll get to that next week, next Monday. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't forget that your mind is your own. No one ever has a right to dominate that or to take your right of thinking away from you. With that comes responsibility. With that comes a need to be consciously present with wherever you are and whatever you're doing, to be aware that you do make a difference. that when you are consciously present in your life and just don't float along in la-la land, when you are consciously present, you're going to have an effect on other people by example. You're going to walk the walk, not just talk the talk. And as my guest today, William Gladstone, said, don't look to other people to take over your life. Take a positioning of strength and perseverance in being who you are and making the best of what you have to offer. And constantly, constantly, be willing to expand your mind. Don't get locked into paradigms that paralyze you with fear. You're the boss of your own space between your ears. Take charge of it, because it's a good thing to know that you have it, number one, and number two, use it. It's empowering, and by being empowered personally, you empower other people. You become a leader, not just a follower. This is Donna Sebo. So glad you were able to join me today. We'll be talking right here on BBSRadio.com, Station 1, on Monday, same time, same place. Donna, bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.